Today we're going to be talking about the Law of the Wall. Many of you are really familiar with the Law of the Wall. You've probably hit the wall enough times in your life that you've got road rash or you've got some kind of ailment that's bothering you and you have to have a cure for it, and you just haven't come to the whole understanding of the Law of the Wall. Basically, the Law of the Wall says that you will hit a wall in every endeavor that you make. Right, Tiffany?
Right. That's it in a nutshell. Some people, you know, they're so good, they see the wall coming and they just jump.
Yeah.
We have all these.
People are that way, but I'll tell you, you know what? I've talked to some of the greatest people alive. You know, I've had interviews with some of the finest men that have ever lived, in my opinion, who are really doing wonderful things in their lives and their communities. And bar none, I have asked them that, you know, what are some challenges you have faced? And some people will say, oh, I've totally gone bankrupt twice.
Yeah. No person escapes.
Yeah. Or, oh, I totally... I couldn't make it, you know, I hit this this wall in my life and I couldn't get past it until I changed my habits. You know, my brother, he's a founder of Kinko's. When he first started his business, two of his stores, his store burnt down twice. There's a roadblock there. And he told me, he says, there were many lessons I had to learn in that experience. So just remember, take heart that when you hit a roadblock or when you hit a wall, yes, it's going to hurt, but there is a way to get through it.
Tiffany, that's right.
Could you take a few minutes and kind of outline for us that process?
I will, and if I have your permission, after I outline it, I'd love to share a story with it too.
Okay.
Does that sound good?
That sounds great.
Okay. Sometimes it's human nature to want to avoid pain or difficulty or opposition or anything like that. And so the first thing that I want to share is actually our perception of the wall, because of course the things that we're teaching the youth and the things that we're taking into our life with growing and moving up through the scholar ladder, the vision, mission, skills, and ability, the perception we have is an ability. And getting through the Law of the Wall is a mixture of ability and skill. And the perception, we can either have a negative perception or we can actually look and say, yes, what an opportunity. So I want to share something about how we can have that perception about when we hit a roadblock or a wall. And the first analogy that I want to give is of a tree. Sometimes when a tree's seed is planted and the tree begins to grow, there can be water quite close to the surface, and the tree doesn't have to dig very deep to get its water. And so the roots stay kind of shallow because it's really easy for it to suck up its water, and the tree grows up and up and up, and that is just great when there's no wind. And that is just great until it bears fruit and gets heavy. And there comes time sometimes that the water is so close that you can get a batch of trees that doesn't sink its roots, and an occasional wind will come up, or it'll bear its first heavy crop, and boom, it just topples. But if you've got trees that have to sink its roots and go deep to get its nutrients and to find its water, and it has to push its way through the rocks and through the clay and through some sand and boom, 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 grow, 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 curve this way, go this way, come over here, and its roots are sunk deep, then when the winds blow, it just stands stronger.
Wow.
And it's there, and when it's small and the winds blow, it practices sending out shoots off of its roots, and they tie together, and they're deep, and they're strong, and so when the tree gets really tall, it's had tons and tons and tons of practice standing, and it can weather the storm, and it is what it is because of the wind, and that's what I realize. And it's the same thing with our muscles. It's the same thing that if the muscles, like in our physical body, are never ever used,
that's why they call it ripped. When you're you're really strong, because you have to actually rip down, tear down muscle so that you can build it up again.
That's right. That's what happens when we work out really, really hard. And if you've ever seen someone who's crippled and they actually don't feel the strain and the opposition they don't have the sensation and the feeling, and sometimes it's the feeling we're afraid of, okay? When we hit the wall, we're like, no, you know what? That is the best thing ever.
Yeah.
It is the best thing ever, because someone who is crippled and they can't have that feeling, of course they have no muscle either. They would give anything to feel.
Yeah.
They would give anything to work. And sometimes we just have to see it that way. It's just like if you take a metal and you want to make a sword, it has got to be heated up, and it's got to be pounded, and it's got to be molded. And that's what the law does to us if we'll let it. And that's what the law is. And I want to show that we have three choices when we hit that wall. And the first thing is to recognize, how am I viewing this? I'm like, ouch, oh, that hurts, ow, stop, you know? I'm going to run away. Or am I like, okay, I'm taking this head on, and I'm going to have energy, and I'm going to find the thing that, because here's the deal, it's all about who we're becoming and the character we build. It's not even, and this is the funny thing, it's not even about the wall.
No.
And we think it is, and it's not.
Yeah.
That's, you know, the tree is growing. It's not about the rock it hit. It's about moving around it and the action we take. So here are the three choices that we find ourselves facing when a challenge comes into our life. The first one is we have the choice to fail. We have the choice to give up. We have the choice to stop and stop, to sit down. And I don't know. I can't tell you.
We have the choice to say, this is too hard. I don't want to do this anymore.
Exactly. I'm done. We really have that choice. Yep. And sometimes we don't even realize that we quit. I mean, I was so proud and so happy for it. Here's the deal. All of us sometimes make that choice. But the point is to recognize and not choose to continue failing. And failure is not that you fell down. Failure is that you didn't get back up.
Yeah.
And that's really...
This is the thing. When we sometimes people think that failure is final. That you experience a failure, or you experience a series of failures, and then so it's time to quit.
Yeah, quitting. It's
quitting is a choice.
That's right.
Have to quit ever.
That's right. That's right. One of my most favorite poems that I grew up with, and oh man, I wish I could just say it instead of having to tell the story, is one that my dad would tell us about the race and the boy who wanted to win and he fell down. Get up and win that race. He hears his dad calling, and he's running, and he falls again, and he hears his dad, get up and win that race. And he gets up, and he runs, and doggone it, if he doesn't fall again. And he's got a choice every time, and everybody in the race is leagues ahead of him. Why in the heck should he keep running? Everybody else is so far ahead, but he hears his dad, get up and win that race. And you know what? The crowd cheers when the first winner crosses that line. But when he crosses that line, the crowd is not just cheering. They are standing up and yelling and clapping and crying, because it's universal that we fall. It's not necessarily universal that we get back up and keep on going. And one of our teacher reports this last week was someone who was really touched by when Natalia and Elodie talked about love versus force, and she said, you know, I've run into the same thing in my life, and I just give up, and she said, I'm not giving up this time.
Wow.
I'm going to face it, and I'm going to do it. And it was just beautiful. But sometimes that's one of our choices, is to give up. The next choice we have when we hit a wall is the path of mediocrity. And sometimes the path of mediocrity looks like we're, like, really getting a lot of work done. But the truth is, the path of mediocrity means that we waste our time. And here's what it looks like. We hit a wall, and we're like, oh, you know, I've got to get over this wall. I'm going to go ask my best friend what to do. I'm going to call my sister. I'm going to chat with my husband. I'm going to call my 10 friends. In fact, at the luncheon today, I'm going to bring it up and get everybody's advice. And the path of mediocrity is going to the crowd. And it seems like it's the way to get over it. But what it does is it gives us a whole bunch of advice and we get confused, and we pick one, and we try it, and we pick this one, and we try it, and we argue with ourselves about which one to do, and whoever we have the strongest allegiance to, that's sometimes the one we'll take, and we just waste our time. Because not all information is equal, and there can be a whole bunch of things that are true, but there's only going to be one that's the best right.
Right. And you know, it's interesting, Tiffany, I realize that when we come to this place in our lives, sometimes if we're the kind of person, and actually I want to tell you, there are some personalities, specific personalities that tend to do this more than others. A red personality would hardly ever do that because they want to always see themselves empowered. So they'll go to a book or they'll go to, you know, to other sources, to God lots of times. But we find, like a yellow personality, sometimes blue personalities, they tend to want to go toward, you know, approval of others. And so they want others to, especially blue people, they want everyone to know what their weaknesses are and talk about it and get everyone talking about it because they think that that's what's rallying people around them. And then they get really confused because they hear all of these different voices telling them what to do.
Well, it's so amazing to have you tie it into part of our specific personality makeup because it's true. Depending on what your personality is, I know that it's very true that reds often won't go to people, but the reds often, and this is important to understand because your weakness, you got to look at your weakness and your strength. They'll often never go to anybody when they need to because
right.
They rely on themselves. They're chronic, and they know they can do it, and they trust themselves, but not anybody else to get it done, and they won't get it done right anyway. And so, it all fits into the path of mediocrity. If you sometimes it looks like going to the crowd, sometimes it looks like relying only on self. Sometimes, you're right, Melody. You're absolutely right.
That's why it's really vital for us to understand who we are our personalities. And once we start really comprehending what our personalities are, we can look very critically at, say, what do I tend to do that's probably not healthy for me, you know?
Yeah.
Because
well, here's
my personality type.
That's right. And here's the third path, and it's the path of success, and this is what people do who learn the law of the wall and how to navigate through the law of the wall. And it's just really simple. You hit the wall, boom, you come up against the wall, you get on your knees. I mean, that's the visual image I want you to have. Hit the wall, get on your knees. Now, let me explain this in another way. If we hit the wall and move into a place where our brainwave is a certain brainwave and it looks like this, blame, that's a great one. Oh, that game is good. And, Melody, I love that you say we need to know ourselves because it's about that. When I find myself blaming, it's hard to get out of it, you know? Just the other day it happened to me where I wanted to do something and because I needed to help someone else and then they ended up not needing my help, I wasted 2 hours of my time because I had to stick around because I thought that they needed a ride. They didn't. Well, I was upset for half an hour because I'd wasted 2 hours of my time and I was blaming them for not communicating to me, you know? Well, what a waste of my time that I sat there and blamed, you know? Okay, blame. Next one is if we go into a place of criticizing, then that's not getting, this is the place we don't go to. The other one is complaining, another one is fear, and another one is comparing. Those five things, blame, criticize, complain, compare, and fear, are the type of brainwave that we can't get inspiration to know. We have to have inspiration in order to get over the wall. That's the deal. That's the growth. That's the character. And
can I add one more to your
yes.
Control?
Control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
if we have to control it. Well, yeah, that's just it. We have to admit we can't control it. That's so beautiful. That is just, in fact, I'm so glad you told that one. I am so glad because this is a true story. This is absolutely, totally a true story. And this is exactly what I'm saying with if we can get ourselves to a state of mind where we can receive inspiration and then go and do it, that is the basic law of the wall because it's an opportunity to put ourselves in a state of mind where we can receive inspiration and then do it. Because the whole premise of the law of the wall is, oh, I need something. There's something I don't have. I need something. My friend was driving in a car. She'd been driving across several states, and I don't know if she hit black ice or what, but she started to swerve, okay?
Yeah.
And she thought, oh, I can control this, okay? She thought, I can control this. So she started to correct and swerve more. She said, I can control this. And she started to correct. She goes, I can do this. I've done this before. I'm totally fine. This is in my hands. And pretty soon she was completely spinning around on the freeway. And every time she spun backwards, she could see the semi light, okay, that was behind her. And so she finally realized she knew the truth. I am not in control. And she had to either go to the place of fear or immediately hit her knees. And she did. She completely submitted. She got out of that place, and she just says, she asked for help.
What do I do?
She asked for help, and it came. And she gently went off the road and guided her car off the road. But it's true.
And the whole key was to not try to keep controlling the steering wheel.
At that point, yes, sometimes that's the choice we have to make, is that we are not.
Usually what you have to do on black ice, right, let go of the steering wheel. You have to let go. I've had this experience. I was going down the road, and I was totally jackknifing. I was totally I splayed across the two lanes of the highway, and I kept sliding and sliding. Finally, I let go of the steering wheel. I let go of control, and boom, it corrected itself, and it was fine.
Yeah, sometimes that's what it is. And you know, when I'll tell this two stories, because I remember I'm going to tell one about you, and I'll tell mine and then yours. It was at the beginning when I had gotten, and so strongly, the call, and it was so clear. The call came, and it was to help make Thomas Jefferson Education available to the youth, and it was particularly the youth of the United States, that's what I saw, and up into Canada. And I worked. I received the call. I believed in it, and I worked, and I worked, and I worked.
For those of you who are wondering what the call that she's talking about, I'm going to go over that in just a minute, but go ahead and listen to her story.
Yeah,
thank you.
You're good. And I had this desire to do it, and I was putting in the work, because that's part of it. You have to put in the work. Sometimes we can get the call and then not work, and, you know, well, we didn't receive the call. So I'm going along. And
I didn't receive the call.
Yeah, receiving is an action, like the quarterback, receivers, whatever. Yeah, it's a lot of work. You know, receiving is big. So I had received it, and I was doing the work, and I had the first scholar project. I was working with a team of several people on the first scholar project. I mean, Dr. Hinke, Dr. DeMille, Julie Early. It was awesome, and things were coming along. And I realized, I have been called to help make a Thomas Jefferson education available to the youth. And I am not the author of a Thomas Jefferson education. And for me to actually do this, I have got to get Dr. DeMille's buy-in. Right? And that was a big wall. I was like, how am I going to do this? And I remember I got on my knees and I put myself in that state of mind where I was relaxed and I was open and I was positive and I could create and I could think and I could feel, and I slowed my life down. I shut the door so my little kid, you know, couldn't distract me for a minute. And I put myself in that place. That place is so important, where we quiet and we still ourselves. And this is the crazy thing. I thought my question was, how do I? Well, I know I need to bring this to Oliver DeMille, and I know that I need to get him to support this. And I want to go see him. And what is this? How do I do this? But I needed inspiration. Well, the inspiration was totally far from what I thought. The idea that came to me, a person came into my mind. That's what happened. A person came into my mind, and I knew I needed to go see him, and he was not my mentor. He and I weren't particularly strong friends. and that I needed to go show him the scholar project, tell him my ambition to bring it to the youth, and blah, 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 and I did it. And I set up the appointment, and I was in his office, and I showed him the stuff, and he gave me 3 or 4 pieces of advice. Now, the reason why that's different than the law of mediocrity is because I never had to question whether or not I should do the advice.
Because you knew that you'd gotten
the I already knew. That was just perfect. Exactly. And so I never had to sit there and doubt whether or not I needed to get a new haircut so that I
right.
didn't just look like a hippie mom. I didn't have to, you
it's
know.
Very interesting. It's very interesting, Tiffany, because lots of people will put lots of time into thinking about, oh, I need a mentor, and they go to the person that they really feel like needs to be their mentor, and they say to them, I really felt strongly that I need you to mentor me, and then
they don't do what they say.
All of a sudden, what you've done, if the mentor accepted, what you've done is you've passed on a mantle of stewardship. If you really, truly think this person is that person, you've passed on a mantle of stewardship, and you've said to them, please show me what the next step in my life is, or please help me through this, whatever it is.
Right,
and
then they can sometimes fight it.
Yeah, well, or that person will say, okay, I know exactly what it is. If I'm your mentor, you know the rule of mentoring. Usually if you are looking for a mentor, it's because you need to do something for them, right? You need
sometimes,
to,
yes.
Right. You need to get on their boat, on their ship. Mentors
yes.
are very busy, and usually they have ships. So if you want them to mentor you, usually you have to get on their ship. And so they invite you onto the ship, and you look around, and you're like, wait a minute. I don't
this is
like
what
the
I
ship.
Yeah.
I don't like this ship.
Oh, yeah.
This isn't what I was looking for.
When it's
and
that type of long-term mentoring, it's very true.
Yeah. And then,
yeah, and when
then
you,
if you choose not to be on their ship, then you know, you've just basically said to your higher power, your God, show me a different ship.
Yeah, show me a different mentor. That one wasn't true.
Exactly.
It's true. It is a tendency to fight. You can fight what the mentor says, and if you know they're the right mentor, don't fight what they're saying. Yep, exactly. But I didn't have to doubt it. I didn't have to doubt it at that point because I'd followed the law of the wall, and I had gone to that place of quietness. And
right.
I remember that happening to you once, Melody, where you had been studying. I mean, I was on the outside watching this. You'd been studying for months and months and months, and I'm talking hardcore
study.
Yeah. And sometimes you'd call me, and I'd help you through something, and blah blah blah. But this one time, you
felt so frustrated. I was
confusion.
I kept coming to the same thing over and over and over again. And I remember I got to the place where I just decided to shut my books.
Yeah.
That it was something I didn't understand, and I needed to shut my books and leave it for a little while. So I shut them. I left it for a while. That's so hard to do when you're in the middle of something because you want to just push right through it, you know. But I followed that impression. I shut my books, and I didn't come back to it for a couple of weeks. And then I came back, and the question came to my mind, what does this word mean? Because I kept coming up to it. Everywhere I turned, it was that word. And I would look up a definition of that word, and it would tell me what it is, and then I'd forget what it is. And then I'd come to it again, and I knew it was really vital for me to totally understand it. So I picked up my books again. I came to that word again, and I realized, you know what? I've got to know what this word is. I have to find someone who can help me through this. So I felt really impressed to email Dr. DeMille. I never do this. I never, never do this. I emailed him, and I said, please tell me what this means. He gave me a very clear, concise answer. I will never forget the definition of that word ever again. And now
it
I realize...
of 6 months' worth of knowledge. It categorized it all. It ordered
it all through. Yes. And it's his brilliance. It's what he does well. He orders things for you so that you can be clear in your mind the order of things.
Let me ask you a question. When what state did you have to put yourself in to actually have the inspiration to email him?
I spent a lot of time being frustrated first. That was my first state.
Okay. And you couldn't get over it.
And then I got confused.
Okay.
Well, first I got confused, then I got frustrated. That's what it was. Got confused, then I got frustrated. Then I left it. As soon as I was able to get still in my mind, okay, calm down. It's totally okay. You're going to make it through this. Because I got still, all of a sudden the idea came. Just email Dr. Mill and ask him the definition of this word. The thing is, there were several definitions of the word. Nobody really was able to put it in the kind of words I could understand.
Yeah, that really
so I had to go to that quiet space.
Yeah. Well, I know that we've asked Tatiana to get on here with us. Yes. Was she able to come?
Yes, she's on. And
okay,
Tiffany,
wonderful. So I'm going to be quiet a little bit while
okay.
You talk to Tatiana.
Okay, what I'd like to do right now is introduce to you, I'm going to kind of take you through the same thing that Tiffany just taught us. In some wonderful stories and examples of the Law of the Wall, but I want to refer to an ancient cycle that Dr. DeMille and several have called the Hero Cycle. And I want to introduce this to you so that you understand, you can be able to say to yourself, you know, have I been here? Am I here? Where am I now? So that you can have a way to measure maybe what your roadblocks might look like or maybe when you are hitting a roadblock. So my favorite story of the hero cycle is found actually in the book called The Dream Giver. It's very, very specific about the hero cycle. And it's a story of a man named Ordinary who lives in the land of familiar. And one day, you know, he's used to all his familiar things, and one day he wakes up to a big dream in his heart. And that part of the story is illustrating what we call the call. So if we want to be great statesmen, people say, I need to find my mission. I need to find purpose in life. I need to, okay, you can have a sense of where you're going to go, and you can start going toward that, but until you really start getting that wind beneath your wings, that passion, that, oh, my gosh, this is so what God wants me to do, or this is so what I was born to do, you basically are just preparing for the call up until that point. So Ordinary wakes up and he sees this. Tatiana, are you in the line? No, she's not there. Ordinary wakes up and he sees this a feather in his windowsill after he gets this big dream in his heart. And the feather represents his call. And he goes to his best friend. He explains to his best friend what happened to him. He tells his father what happened to him. His best friend tells him, oh, well, that's really cool, but, you know, that's a little bit too big for you. His father says to him, son, I once had a big dream like that before when I was younger. And I waited and waited and waited for the opportunity to pursue that dream. And one day I woke up and looked at my feather and it had turned to dust. So he says to him, don't do what I did. Don't waste your life waiting. Just make the choice. So the next step in the cycle, first gets the call. Next step in the cycle is he has to make a choice. So he makes the choice to follow, and then he has to do something about it. So he decides to leave the land of familiar, and he needs to make big choices, right? And when he starts making these big choices, he starts coming up with all kinds of stumbling blocks, people telling him, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? And he comes first of all, up to these stumbling blocks. That's the first time after you make the choice, that's the first time you're going to start really hitting true stumbling blocks, okay, after you accept the call. Then you go to the next, then he made all the changes he needed to do. He made these choices that were very difficult for his life. Then he decided to leave the land of familiar, and as he was leaving the land of familiar, he hits a huge wall of fear, which actually becomes one of the biggest, one of the first trials he meets. He has to go through the wall of fear, and he ends up getting a mentor. When he gets to the edge of familiar, he finds a mentor called Champion, and that's when he really gets a good mentor. Now realize that you probably have mentors up into your life. But this mentor we're talking about is a mission mentor, someone who can really help you through to your mission. You know, Tiffany and I, we like to say that we can be liberal arts mentors, but really, honestly, what we see ourselves as mission mentors, people who are really trying to change the world through offering a Thomas Jefferson education in a form that many people can flock to. It's not always the exact, it's not this, the, the form that every single person who's doing a Thomas Jefferson education has to have to be successful, but it is a good form to help them to help people have a community, immediate community that will help them get to the next step in their life. So we're hoping that our as you're experiencing our mentoring, that we're helping you through all the roadblocks that you're going to meet as you come up to the challenges of creating a Commonwealth school. Recently, I was in an area and I was having a conversation with one of the Commonwealth school directors, and she said, "You know, we're having all these issues and we're having all these problems, and people aren't agreeing, and some people want this and some people want that." And she says, "You know, this is so hard and so confusing, and these people that I've been best friends with forever we're starting to argue." She says, "Melody, this isn't the way it should be." Well, that's a really hard place to be if you think that's not the way it should be. I'd like to have unity and harmony in my life forever. But in order for us to really make a great community, I'm telling you, when the Founding Fathers came together, they didn't all agree. In fact, Patrick Henry vehemently disagreed with everything they were doing with the whole Constitution. Does that mean they didn't make the Constitution because Patrick Henry, a great leader in their movement, didn't agree with them? No. Patrick Henry pulled himself away, and he ended up living a secluded life in Virginia and trying to help his wife and his children. He had several children, and his wife went insane, and she had to have all kinds of help, and he was pulled out of the arena. Sometimes that happens to key players that we're working with. They're pulled out of the arena. But if you stick with it and you realize that the only time you're going to really, truly fail is when you quit, that quitting isn't an option. If the Founding Father says, "This is too hard, we want to quit," what would we be left with today? Nothing. Okay, so you get a mentor, and the mentor helps you through the hard work. Sometimes in the hero cycle, they call this the desert or the wilderness. While we're in the wilderness, we're going to hit test, traps, and trials. Let me give you the definition of what a test is. A test is an external challenge. A trap is an internal weakness. And trial is something that needs to be endured.
So, Mommy, so, that your trap is kind of like our human nature getting us in trouble.
Yes. Yes, a trap is our human. Yes. And the traps, when I was talking to Tiffany on the phone, I was telling her how important it is for us to understand our personality types. The reason why we want to understand our personality types is because a lot of times if we understand our personality types, it will tell us what our traps are potentially could be. Like Tatiana, are you there?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hi. according to your personality profile, maybe some of them, what would be some of the traps that you would fall into?
Me? You're talking about?
Yeah.
Judging too quickly and creating false problems.
False securities?
Well, false problems because I try to push myself too hard, and so then I create a problem.
Oh, I see. So one of the traps you fall into is you try to move, you try to run faster than you can walk, or walk faster than you can run. Yeah. Okay. So one of my traps in my personality profile would be that I understand something about my personality. My personality really likes to be the relationship, friend, hanging out, having a good time, playing. So play becomes a point of procrastination for me. That's one of the traps that potentially I can fall into as in my personality type. Okay. Did you have something else you wanted to talk about there, Tatiana?
No.
Okay. So trials is something we have to endure. Can you give me an example of a trial, Tatiana?
Well, several historical examples, you know, the children of Israel.
I can't hear you very well. Can you move your phone?
The children of Israel were stuck in the desert for 40, you know, years. And that was a trial. I mean, it wasn't like God was going to... He had already saved them from Egypt, but that was a trial to purify them.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we have lifelong trials with health sometimes because those trials bring us closer to God and accept of ourselves. Like Aunt Margot, I'd have to say, would be that way.
My sister, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, my sister is very ill. She's had all kinds of trials in her life. yeah, I'm glad you brought up the whole Moses and children of Israel, because this cycle can be found right with Moses and the children of Israel. In fact, this cycle is found in our core book everywhere, because it is the cycle of great statesman heroes.
Well, you can see how the children of Israel, when they first got out, were kind of tested, and they failed that test, and then they put themselves into a trap with a golden calf. And so God's like, well, we're going to have to put you through a long trial then.
Yeah, that's right.
And so then the desert was just sort of
so sometimes we're in this trap. Our internal weaknesses, our personality problems, or our cultural buy-ins, and it's trapping us. And so God has to give us trials to help us get out of the traps. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, because the trial is what purifies our personality. And so if we keep hitting the same, I mean, God gives us tests to see if we're ready to go to the next level, I guess, or ready to progress, or we can handle more, we can become what we need to be. And when we fail those tests, it's usually because of our inability to overcome through in ourselves. And so then sometimes then we set ourselves up in traps, and so God oftentimes says, all right, well, we're going to give you a trial to help you get through this.
Right.
So you can keep going on. Otherwise, you just wander around in circles in the desert.
Right. And we're talking, right now in the hero cycle, we're talking about that wilderness period, which is really going to give us all these roadblocks and all this opposition we feel like we're coming up to. Okay. What I think is really interesting is that opposition is a true principle, don't you think, Tatiana?
I think it's like when you're talking about common schools and how someone you talked to, a common school leader, said that, you know, everyone was getting upset and your best friends were agreeing with each other and it wasn't perfect. And I was, when you were talking about it, I was thinking, well, that's the beauty of it, because when there's opposition, there's truth that is found. It's
from the higher places.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, each family has a truth that they understand and they live and they really, really can offer to other families who don't understand that truth. And when you get with a bunch of families and one family says, no, we have all truth, then you have a problem because they don't have all truth and they need to be able to work together and compromise and build truth together so you have complete truth.
Because we can take the strengths of each other.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
And what we each understand. And so many people view that as opposition, but in reality, I don't know, I went on this date with this guy. He's a Democrat, and I really had a lot of fun.
Sorry,
he challenged me.
It's a bad word in our house, isn't it?
Yeah. Well,
our dad thinks it's a bad word anyway.
But I really had a lot of fun because he challenged me, made me think about new things, and I think that when we get together with people who offer opposition to us, number one, we become stronger in our own convictions that we know are true, and then we lose our convictions, are mediocre or not true.
Instead of, this is really interesting. So instead of fighting him and saying, oh, you're totally wrong, you're totally off, you're totally wrong, what you're doing is you're using a skill that you know, that you've learned to understand his position and bring yourself to a higher truth.
Well, actually, I told him, I said, I love to talk to people who I don't agree with because then they can prove where I'm wrong, and then I can build my argument better so that I'm not wrong anymore.
Interesting.
But I think the same thing is true when we face opposition that's not necessarily people but ourselves, because opposition stops us in our path and makes us reevaluate, oh, am I standing on all truths? Because I think we only come across opposition when we oppose natural law. Think about it. Like, the earth never has opposition to its circling or turning around or whatever, because it's never
not opposing natural law.
Yeah, it's never not opposing natural law. So there's never any opposition to the earth going around. It just is. It just happens. But and you know, plants sometimes face trials because that's part of how they grow, but there's not opposition to them unless, you know, humans act upon them and stuff like that. But humans always have opposition because we're always going away from
natural law.
And so I think opposition is what God gives us to say, wait, look, are you sure you want to go down that road?
You need to realign yourself to natural law.
Yeah. And then you'll
And so when we think, when we have this paradigm that we think is right, and we're going along in this paradigm, in this box, I like to call it the box because, you know, I have in front of myself this box that I always see through. and we come along to someone who has a new perspective, new idea, who may be more aligned, their idea may be more aligned with natural law, and we're going to hit loggerheads, right? Because my idea is different from their idea, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so all of a sudden, I'm going to keep hitting myself against this wall every time I come to it because I can't get through the wall. And if I don't listen to that person whose idea is more aligned with natural law, and it's just an idea, right? A way to live our lives. But the systems that we use in our lives help us to be aligned with natural law. That's the whole point of it.
But I think also it doesn't even have to be with people. I think sometimes when I have a paradigm that doesn't go with natural law, and I keep facing opposition in my life where I keep hitting the same roadblocks and it's just me in the world. I keep hitting them, keep hitting them. I can't figure out what, you know, that wall is or whatever. It's usually all the things I'm hitting are opposition because I haven't changed my paradigm.
Right. So having those relationships that help us see things differently is vital to our progress.
Mm-hmm.
Vital to our success. I mean, I think of John Adams and Thomas Jefferson, how many times they hit loggerheads.
Oh, wow.
John Adams just knew he was right, and Jefferson just, you know, quietly resisted him.
But they were both just as stubborn.
Yeah, they were both just as stubborn. these opposition, these opposite things. We know that opposition is true. It's a principle. We see man and woman. Don't they seem opposite? North and south pole. Don't they seem opposite? Left and right. You know, they seem opposite, and they're there for a reason to teach us something. Okay. let me go on to the next thing in the cycle. What happens is once we get through the desert, we work through those test traps and trials, and this cycle is on many levels of our lives. We can, you know, get the call in being a parent, get the call in what we're doing in our Commonwealth schools, get the call in getting a better, more healthy life, get the call, you know, see how we can, receive many calls in our lives. So, but what happens is once we work through those test traps and trials in whatever call it is we're working on, we start feeling the real great success and we can sprint to what we call the last and final test. We will go through one last final test and then we will receive the reward of what we've been working on. We'll see the growth, the prospering of the project that we've been working on. But let's go back to the law of the wall. That was a cycle that I wanted to introduce you so you could kind of decide where am I and what test traps and trials am I, what roadblocks am I facing? Okay, am I facing the first roadblock, which is making that vital choice, and the problem that I'm having is that I'm rejecting the call, or I'm listening to movie voices, or, I'm too afraid, you know, the criticism, judging, all those things that Tiffany talked about, okay? Am I really in the wilderness where I'm facing test traps and trials, where I have external challenges or I have internal weaknesses? When you are in the place of test traps and trials, I will tell you, I know every person I see who's in test traps and trials, they are in a place of, okay, I know I'm doing what's right. I know I'm where I'm supposed to be, and they can self-evaluate. I was in an interview with a wonderful man one time, and I said to him, if you had any advice for me, what would it be? And he looked at me straight in the eye, and he said, the most important thing in this life is self-honesty. You will not be caught for too long in any test or trap, or trial even, if you can be completely and truly self-honest, if you can look at yourself, evaluate yourself honestly, and say, oh, wow, that was a big mistake I made. I'm so sorry, and go apologize. Or, oh, wow, I was doing that because this is all about me. This wasn't about my Commonwealth school, or this wasn't about the progress of the mentees that I have. This is about me. I've got to step back and look at my pride. Those people who are in the test trap and trial, the wilderness place, become the most self-honest people I know. Those are the people who start to align themselves and become of one heart and one mind with one another. You know, Diane Jepson and I don't necessarily do the same things to make a Thomas Jefferson education successful, but we in every way support one another And some of the ideas that she has are very similar to ideas that I have because they're aligned with natural law. And when we have a discussion about things we're doing, they don't conflict. They're just a different choice. Okay, so mine might be a choice for somebody else, and hers a choice for somebody else. But because we're both in the wilderness area, or we're both on the path together, we don't conflict with one another. We don't have relationship problems with one another. We have the spirit of we're working this out and we're working together on the same team. We are not competing. Tatiana, I'm always referring back to that wonderful essay that you read of Emerson, was it Emerson?
Mm-hmm.
Called Greatness. And he says, if every one of us could align ourselves with our own bias, we'd stop bumping into each other and getting in each other's way.
Yeah, and there wouldn't be that envy or pride or fear.
Right. When we realize we're all in the wilderness together working toward the same goal, we don't have envy and pride and fear of one another.
I want to go back to what you're talking about.
Wait, I can't hear you. What did you say? Sorry.
I want to go back to where you're talking about the self-honesty part.
Mm-hmm.
And there's oftentimes I found myself in the same position where I've hit a wall and I've realized it's something inside me. But oftentimes I have a hard time being able to step outside of myself completely. And so oftentimes I think to be real self-honest with yourself, you have to find someone who you completely trust to go to and say, I think I have a problem. Could you tell me what it is? Because you can't.
But I can't see it,
but I know it's there. And that sometimes is hard because you're like, okay, I'm not Superman, and now I'm letting you know, and now you're going to find this problem. You probably already were aware of this problem, but now I'm admitting I have it. And so it's kind of a pride issue, too, but oftentimes I've found myself like, I can't find the problem, and I'll go to a mentor that I really trust, and they'll be like, well, here you go. You know, it's a really sore spot, so like, here you go. Here's the open wound, and here's some salt in it. And, you know, and that's where I think it's the people it's really the dividing line of whether you're going to keep continuing in the desert or the wilderness, or you're going to go back to safe land,
right?
Because you can't handle the self-analysis,
right? And I'm glad you brought that up. Going to a mentor, saying, "Okay, I can't see myself very clearly. Can you help me through this trial or this trap, whatever? Can you help me see myself so that I can get through this roadblock?" And then the mentor tells you. Sometimes what happens, or the mentor doesn't tell you and is afraid to tell you because you're afraid you're going to take it. But sometimes what happens is this kind of falls into that category of criticism. We think, oh, I'm the mentor. You have to listen to me. Or I'm the one in charge here. You have to listen to me. Or I have the answers for you. You have to listen to me. And we give people advice before they've asked for it. Which
yeah.
is definitely a trap
for both people, because you know when you talk about the powers, the levels of power. If you give advice for somebody who's not ready for it, it becomes pride on both sides, which only falls lower.
Okay, just remember that unsolicited advice is criticism, and we fall into the trap of criticism, and then we really get out of that that good place the mind needs to be to make progress. Okay, so the vital skills that you need to have to get through the wall, I'm going to go through these really quickly. First, you have to recognize that you've hit a wall. Usually you can recognize that you've hit a wall because you're frustrated or because you're confused. Those are some experiences of, oh, okay, wait, I'm at a wall. Okay, or you get distracted or the work slows down. Right, Tatiana? That's when you know you've hit a wall. Let's see. Okay, so we're hitting a wall here. So then what do you do? That's the question. What do you do when you hit a wall? And Tiffany went over this a little bit. She talked about humbling yourself, getting on your knees, recommitting yourself to that vision.
I think maybe the most important thing for me when I hit a wall is step back and ask for help to name the wall for me.
Right.
And I don't know if you ever talked about that, but like, and often I'll just go to God and be like, what's my wall? Because then if I know what it is, then I'll know how to approach it, you know, and how to be humble and which way and where I go to seek my answers.
I've been watching you this summer, Tatiana, and I've been duly amazed at how God works with you. You know, you were just on your track. You were ready to go. You were rearing to go. You were you were, you know, I'm going to come home, I'm going to make some money, I'm going back to college, this is what I'm going to do with my life, you know, and you're the kind of person that has this whole plan for yourself, right? And so, and I've watched you do this your entire life. Okay, I have this plan, and then I'm going to go forward, and I make it happen, and you're really driven, you have a lot of initiative, you make it happen, and it's wonderful, and it's great. And this is your senior year of college. You know that the at Georgia College, they rotate the junior and senior class. So one year they teach the senior curriculum, and the next year they teach the junior curriculum. And, you know, this year is when they're teaching the senior curriculum because you've already done the junior curriculum, and you need this year, right? So you're thinking to yourself, well, how stupid is that that I'm not going to go, why would I not go back to college? That's my plan. I'm going to go to Georgia College, and then all of a sudden this summer you get really, really sick, and it throws you for a loop. And you think you're in for this, you know, trial that you have to pass, or this trial that you have to get through, right? Yeah. And you spend, I watched you for 2 months spending time trying to figure out how to get through this sickness so that you could get back to college. And really the sickness was, okay, I'm going to keep you sick enough, just long enough to make it so that you can't go back to college, right? So all of a sudden you have to reevaluate. Oh, so spread, what am I doing? What did you do, Tatiana?
Reevaluate a lot of things, trying to figure out, submit myself to the new path that I was supposed to take.
So God had a new path for you. He was taking you off the path that you were on so that you, because he had to jump you over to a different track.
Yeah.
Do you like it?
I'm happy, but I'm only happy because I know I'm doing the right thing and where I'm supposed to be. But it's hard because it's not where
it's not what really where you feel all your power.
Yeah, I feel kind of crippled. But
you're happy because you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, and I think sometimes like the hard thing for me is understanding, you know, what God's will is, and also, you have to understand what season you're in, and if you fight your season, you're going to create another wall on top of that, and you're going to have, like, it's going to be a domino effect of walls that you're going to put up if you're fighting your season, and so you're going to try to tackle these walls, but in reality, it's just one huge wall, and that you're fighting your season, and you need to stop fighting your season, submit to your season, and all those walls will go away immediately.
Right. And we do a whole conference call on seasons. So if you're wondering what that is, we'll be doing that in February probably when everybody is coming through a winter.
Yeah.
Okay. So you've humbled yourself. You get a diagnosis. This is exactly what you did this summer. You got your diagnosis. God said to you, I need you to stay home. Oh, okay. So you've got your diagnosis. That's been your big frustration. And then you start submitting yourself to that. Now, the answers or your diagnosis comes in many, many forms. Sometimes it could just be an idea. Oh, I got this new idea, and you follow through with it. Or it could be a person, like Tiffany talked about. That person has the key to the door that you need to get through, and she was told to go to Dr. Brooks and get the answer that she needed, and she did. She made some amazing changes in her life because of one single conversation. That's the power of when you're following the inspiration you need to get and you're going to the right person, it will change the course of your life. It will be a turning event for you. If you go, it's not necessarily your mentor that you needed to seek out, but a mentor, someone who had an answer for you, you seek them out, they give you an answer, and you will never forget it. You know, we look back at what the advice that Dr. Brooks gave Tiffany, and it truly formed Lemmy. It made Lemmy what it is today. Okay, so you can go to an idea, or you can go to the mentor who's mentoring you in your liberal arts or in your mission mentor, or whichever mentor that you're working with at the time, and then the answer will come through then. Or it will just come through an impression that you shouldn't push through this wall. Like I said, you know, when I got to my place when I was studying and I kept hitting the same wall because I couldn't understand the definition of this word, I let it go. I sat back and said, okay, I'm just going to let this go for a little while. And after 2 weeks of taking time off of it, I was able to come back to it. My head was clearer, and I was able to understand it.
As you were just talking about things, an idea came into my mind. I think that walls and opposition and things are the refining tools that God uses to refine our wills so that they align with His will.
Exactly. Which comes to the next point I was going to say is that once you get the answer, you need to submit to the cure. You need to align yourself with His will. You need to submit to it. Be obedient to it.
And I think, you know, since we are offspring of God, you would think that we would easily submit to the will of the Father, but we don't, because we are free agent independent beings. And as free independent beings, we have a huge desire to fill our agency and to live our agency, and it's hard for us to submit because we don't know the balance between submitting and choosing and all those different things. And often many of us never fully submit to somebody because we're afraid that we'll lose our agency.
It's really, really true, isn't it? Okay. A good mentor. Okay, say someone comes to you. Let's kind of turn the tide a little bit, and let's say, okay, say someone comes to you and says, I've hit a wall. I need help getting through my wall. As a mentor, what can you do? Let me give you just immediate things that can come to your mind. Someone comes to you and says, or someone doesn't come to you, you can see they're hitting a wall, and you need to teach them something that will help them, but you don't want to criticize them. So you need to come to a place of ask yourself this question. Okay, I'm going to give you, write this down. It's really important. Is this a skills problem, an ability problem, a vision problem, or a mission problem? I remember one time one of my teachers came to me and said, you know, my kids who've graduated from TJYC for some reason just aren't getting the vision they need. I need to take them to the next level. I'm going to teach them for another semester, and we're going to just focus on vision. What a great mentor that is. I have another mentor that said, you know, when my students come into TJYC, they just aren't quite ready because for whatever reason, we haven't set up the systems, or we're not doing it for them, or it's not, what we're doing is not enough for them. And so they just need a scholar skills class so that I can just get them that one last push to get them to the level that they can feel confident that they'll be successful at TJYC. It's a mentor's responsibility to ponder over these things, to think these things through. Ask yourself the question, is this a skills, mission, ability, or vision problem? And everything will fall under that. Okay, Tatiana, let me ask you this. If I have a pride problem, what category does that fall into? Vision, mission, ability, or skills?
It's an ability, wouldn't it?
Okay, it's an ability. What's the ability? I would agree with you. Sometimes the ability is that I can't get vision.
Yeah.
That's ability.
I think it's you're unable, or it could also be a vision problem because you don't have a vision of self, and so you have a big wall of pride. So because you're so unstable as a self. And
but the question is, how do you get vision? It always goes back to that ability of being able to get vision.
Yeah, right, and so I think also it could be an ability you don't have the capability of being humble.
Right. So, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought I just lost you. I recently had an experience with a student that he was one of my best students in Key of Liberty. He was working really hard. He was always the first to be done with all of his assignments. He loved his writing assignments. He wanted to share them with us all the time. He was very vivacious and always telling us what was going on in his life and how he the things he'd been studying about the Constitution and. He was one of my finest students, and he came to class this year, and he was coming to class unprepared all the time. He was wasn't reading the material. He wasn't, you know, he was just lagging. And I thought, wow, this just isn't like him. And so I went to his mom and I said, you know, I noticed that Sean is having some problems and isn't necessarily getting his work done on time. Is there something I can do to help him? And his mom said, well, let me tell you what's going on in his life right now. He is really focused on something else in his life. He's really, really excited about financial success and becoming a millionaire, and he's doing everything he can to study and all these books that he's reading, and he's spending all of his time doing that instead of doing Sword of Freedom. And I said, well, I don't see a problem for that. And she said, yes, there is a problem there because he's ignoring every other responsibility in his life. And I said, he is lacking a skill and an ability. She said, what can you do to help me? And I know this mother. She's an amazing mother. She works. She's so great with her kids. she does Thomas Jefferson Education well, so well in her home. And I said, he's lacking a skill. I'm going to take some time at the end of class to teach this skill. So at the end of class, I said, okay, everyone, I just want you to get a piece of paper out. I'm going to teach a scholar skill. This is, we call it scholar skill moment. And occasionally I do it. And I said, okay, today's a scholar skill moment. And I said, I mapped out for them how to make tasks, how to get tasks done. And I said, there are chunky time and there are daily time tasks. And I talked to them about the chunky time tasks. When you're doing a project that you're working on for a play, usually that's a chunky time, right, Tatiana? You know that. It takes a lot of intense time. But just because you're doing a play, does that mean that you can stop combing your hair and brushing your teeth and saying your prayers and maybe doing a math exercise? Or you can't stop those things that are really daily things that need to happen for your health, right, Tatiana?
Mm-hmm.
So I mapped out for them, okay, what are your daily things that you need to get done? Now, what are your chunky things? Now, what happens in your life if you have two chunky things that you have to do? You have a personal project that you're working on, and it's conflicting with your scholar project. How do we do this? And so the kids raise their hand, oh, I know, you could spend one day on your personal project and the next day on your scholar project. Well, that's a good way to, you know, give yourself 4 hours on your personal project and then 4 hours on your scholar project. And then Sean, this kid, raises his hand and says, what if you can't get your mind to stop thinking about it? And one of the students raised her hand and said, well, that's a really good thing when your brain is working really hard on trying to figure something out. But it also could be a really bad thing because then you can get stuck in your own thoughts. Sometimes it's good to get out of your own thoughts. And I'm like, okay, these kids are answering all the questions for me. And another late girl raised her hand and said, you know, I'm really interested in horses right now. And I know that there are certain things that I have to do in my life. And I've decided to give myself a reward. If I get my daily things done, and she didn't know about this, but then she realized this is what she was doing. She says, you know, my mom has some things I need to do, and I have things I need to do. And she says, when I put them first on my agenda, the things I don't want to do. And when I get those things done, I give myself a reward. When I do these six things on my schedule, then I'm going to think about horses and for the rest of the day. And what she was defining is actually a scholar skill, self-discipline, a mastery of her passions, helping herself align herself with what is right and good and healthy, and still being completely full of that zest for life and excitement for life. A good mentor can know when it is one of the four things.
I think also it's important to know, like, there's probably a lot of people freaking out because, you know, well, I don't have that wisdom, or I'm not able to make that judgment. And I think that it's important to understand that when you are called to be a mentor, you're called, and therefore you're giving stewardship over that mentee, and you have the right to receive inspiration as to what that child needs.
Right.
And so, I mean, like, oftentimes people will present me with a problem with a child, and I will be able to find the answer to the problem, but it's not my stewardship.
Right. I think about what Scott Peck says about the difference between a character flaw and a psychosis. What I realize is we have character flaws sometimes that keep us away from asking ourselves the quite vital questions and actually getting the answer. Is this a vision's mission, ability, or skills problem? And we can't find what it is because we don't think it falls into any one of those categories. And I guarantee you it does. But we can't see it because we have a character flaw that keeps us away from actually seeing it. Okay, so then our choice is whether or not we're going to choose the path of failure, the path of mediocrity, or the path of success, which the last point of Tiffany went through several of those. And choosing the path of failure usually is quitting because we fail all the time, but we don't have to quit, right? And choosing the path of mediocrity is to continue to ask for a different trial, ask for a different call, seek everybody's advice, you know, all those different kinds of things. That Tiffany talked about, and that, or we don't find if we find the right mentor, we don't go to them, or we don't follow their advice. The path of success looks like this: we become completely 100% self-honest. We follow the prompting we get. We go to the person, or we follow through with the idea. We put in the hard work it takes, and then we experience a breakthrough in our lives, true breakthrough. And for those of you who remember, we talk about the liberal arts cycle. That's the whole point of the liberal arts cycle, is to get us to a place where we can experience true change in our lives so that we can truly have impact in others' lives.